Street View Podcast is part of the Dallas Public Library's Homeless Engagement Initiative, dedicated to increasing community awareness of issues related to homelessness. The opinions expressed are solely those of the individuals and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Dallas Public Library or the City of Dallas.
How do you want to see it? What do you want to do? You got it all figured out, straight from your cubicle. Life's a musical, maybe a carousel. How do you want to see it? What do you want to do? Perception starts with selection. The same streets you walk on, they carry their own view. This is Street View.
Father God in heaven, all-powerful being, you know all, you see all. You've seen our hearts, our minds, and our souls. In these days and these times, God, we just want to know that we're safe and that we're protected and that we don't have to be afraid of being vulnerable. So we find our most vulnerable seeking you, and we always just, we thank you for the safety that you provide. Today's a new day. Our hearts and our minds and our souls are lifted towards you. We thank you for this opportunity. In Jesus Christ's name, amen. What's up, y'all? It's been a minute. Rashad Anthony Dickerson here in the podcast studio, newly furnished and relocated. We're here at the Dallas Public Library, sitting in a spot with the fam. Miss Antoinette Karis Briggs in the building. Thanks for coming on the show. Miss Jasmine Afrikawala Kallenberg, thank you for coming on the show. And also Mr. Ryan Smith. Thank you guys for being here. Kind of wanted to just jump out there from Jump Street and just say hello to all the listeners, those who have heard, those who have known, and those who will know that I'm a representative of a body of individuals, a body of Christ. And I just want to thank everybody who is in existence for being an attribute to the glory of him who is and will always be and has always been. My co-host, Miss Jasmine, asked me to just speak and be myself. And to be honest, sometimes that's very difficult. I have a lot of selves in my head sometimes. Sometimes I just want to be this person or that person. And in our last conversation, Jasmine told me, I overgeneralize sometimes. Is that true, Jasmine?
Sure, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think we all kind of fall into that trap sometimes. It's where stereotypes come from. It's where when you overgeneralize a group or a person or whatever based on different circumstances, then you run the risk of not really seeing the uniqueness in every person in their situation.
I agree in some ways, but most things happen to most people. For instance, this morning I got up, get on my Facebook. I look on my Facebook and I found out my godmother passed away. Very, very tough for me to deal with. I mean, it still really hasn't hit me yet, but it's something that must happen to all of us. We all gonna see somebody pass away. We all gonna go through that. My birthday was on August 1st. 2 weeks after my birthday hit, my father passed away. And you know, it is fairly difficult to deal with that, knowing my circumstance, my situation, which I share with y'all all the time. You know, on podcasts, I kind of just display who I am as a person and give my life freely so that others might learn from it and gather from it and maybe use something from it in order to better themselves or pass on wisdom or knowledge of some sort. So that really hurt me, Jasmine. I just wanted to let you know.
You
said I overgeneralize. And then I asked some other friends and they said yes in a good way.
Sure. I don't think you mean it in a bad way. I just think that you have to sort of be self-aware of when you do tend to overgeneralize, and feel free to let our audience know what you were overgeneralizing about and why it may have struck a chord with me.
I have a question for you, Antoinette.
All right.
And this is a serious question, and this was just on my head, and I walked up to Jasmine. This was the first thing that came out of my mouth. If the fathers are locked away, who teaches the kids respect?
That's an interesting question. It has a lot of deep aspects to it. I mean, without the fathers there to teach the children respect, they'd have to learn it from their mothers, their Absolutely. Grandfathers, and from the community.
See, my problem with that question is I told him to unask that question because it assumes that respect can only be taught by a father or should be taught by one's father. And respect can be taught directly by a mother, mm-hmm. even if a father is present. And certainly, I think children learn respect in a lot of other ways as well.
See, the biggest thing that you have to take into consideration when you're asking a question like that is there's more than one type of respect. You have to learn how to respect your peers as peers. You have to learn how to respect your elders as elders. You have to learn to respect people on a different level. The same respect that I would show you is not necessarily the respect that I'd show a child. A child would not show respect to a peer that this in the same way that they would show it to an elder or to someone who is in authority. And that's where you have to learn respect from different places in the community.
Key point. I like this woman. This woman's response. I liked her response too.
No, you did not like my response.
It was fairly difficult for me to deal with because it was the first time I had heard that. But you spoke, Antoinette, and said that there are different forms of respect and then that there are different classes of authority in which one might gain a greater respect or a lesser respect toward, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay.
And I think I know where you were coming from with when you asked that question, and that is that your father's incarcerated, mm-hmm. but then where did you learn respect?
My father wrote me, my father wrote me at least 7 or 8 times a year, and he would write me on my birthday. I had a stack of cards, Jasmine. I've thrown more cards and letters away than I've gotten.
And there are plenty of children out there who have fathers in their lives every day. And if anything, some of those fathers teach their kids the opposite of respect. So I don't think that role falls solely on the male parent. And being a new mother myself, I can't help. And being a feminist who believes not that women have some sort of superior power, but that we are equal and that there is potential to learn those things from both parents, from grandparents, from your peers and that kind of thing. Now, the other issue of, yes, are there a lot of black men locked up in this country? Yes. Is that a problem to the traditional familial structure in the African-American community? Yes. And that is a whole other series.
That is not what I asked.
Yeah.
That's not what I asked.
No, it's a problem. But I understand, and I know that that's a topic of interest to you for various reasons and obvious reasons.
You know, it should be, right?
I don't speak up very often, but one thing did just come to mind. Didn't you refer to yourself as one who has been raised by the village? So maybe not even just your parents. You learn
respect from the village.
From everywhere.
Yeah, that's true. But then at the same time, I've learned a lot of maladaptive behaviors from the village as well. And that's not to say negative things come from... You have to take on negative influence.
And you're instilled with some sort of moral compass, whether that's through Jesus or Christianity or through, you know, the wrath of a parent, you know, and the fear of them that you must do right instead of wrong.
I'm telling you, it's turning on my thigh somewhere. I'll be telling people that.
That moral compass on your thigh. But there's, you know, then there's that. There's that right and wrong and then also respect, which is kind of a separate thing. And I know Ryan's about to be a new dad. Mm-hmm. And I wonder what he would say to that question. Do you think your son will learn respect from you and not from your wife?
Well, I hope
I didn't say that.
I hope you'll learn it from both of us.
Thank you.
I know my mom taught me respect as well as my dad.
There we go.
And I learned a lot of respect from a lot of older people that sometimes, you know, and I was getting a little out of line.
Yeah, exactly. They showed you how to respect.
Exactly.
They didn't just tell you to respect them.
Exactly.
Antoinette brought up a point that has been stuck on my brain for a while. You know, when I was a kid, we had a barrier, boundary, or a limitation to the information we received. There are things that I would not and still do not know about that other kids will learn about earlier than I did. And it sometimes blurs the line between parent and child or adult and child. And I feel like that's just a thought on my brain, just a random thought. But I feel like nobody has the, not audacity, but the gumption to attack that issue. I don't feel like kids should have as much or more information than adults. It's a random thought. I'm sorry. I don't know if it like really fits in or ties in with the whole purpose of the podcast, with our initiative to creating humility and bringing people together. But it's just a thought on my brain. I thought to say it, you know, if anybody has anything thought about it,
The children have, they should not have more knowledge?
Not necessarily knowledge, but information.
Than their parents?
Yeah. As much or more than.
Well, I know you see that more and more with technology. And I mean, there's plenty of kiddos out there who know a lot more about the current day and age than their parents do.
Right. For instance, my pop came home in 2007 and we stayed together. And he had a cell phone and he had been gone since 87.
Wow.
So him having a cell phone and not knowing how to use it, and I'm getting fussed at because I got girls' numbers in the phone. I'm like, him not knowing how to use his own phone was kind of difficult. And I think that's one of the, remember you say I overgeneralize, but there are more instances like that that never get spoken of that I think we need to address as people. I think like maybe we should address some of the issues that are really, really prevalent or not as prevalent or not being spoken of as much. For instance, last one. I got a friend and her son is being arrested as a sex offender. He's 14 years old. When the offense happened, he was 10. The little girl was 9. He was 10. He's 14 now. They've arrested him. And he's probably going to have to register as a sex offender for the rest of his life. I don't think that's fair. And I know you got, you know, some legal comrades coming through to the library soon. Why don't you tell us about
that? We're hoping to start a legal clinic here once a week, specifically for those who are experiencing homelessness, who are either incarcerated currently and need a, you know, proper representation, which, as you know, and we know from many of our customers, the public defenders available here in Dallas County are awful and negligent, to say the least. And of course, there's reasons for that, whether it's caseload or whether it's, you know, the pay, whatever it might be. And so we're really excited and lucky to have an individual who I went to school with, who has been following our homeless engagement initiative and our podcast and the things we're doing here at the library, and is an attorney and wants to help out. And he recognizes how poor some of the public defenders, their representation can be. So he will hopefully be able to start that at the beginning of 2016, and he will be able to represent people, like I said, who are either currently incarcerated or who have pending court dates and need an attorney to represent them at that court date, and hopefully present some mitigating circumstances. Obviously, being homeless is mm-hmm. a huge mitigating circumstance to whatever crime they might be charged for. And then hopefully, you know, lessen their sentence. I know that when you were going through something similar this year, it would have been great to have him, by your side to give you a proper defense. Not to say that you were not guilty of the charges for not registering, because that's kind of hard to dispute when it wasn't done.
Yeah.
I mean, there are mitigating circumstances.
True.
And there's certainly, you know, the attestment to your character and to your threat to society, that you really, you're contributing to society. You're probably, you know, more so a productive member of society than those without criminal records. I think so. I would argue that if I were your attorney, which, you know, again, would have hopefully lessened your probation sentence from, you know, 5 years to maybe 2 years or something like that, or something, you know, things can be done when you have the proper representation. So we know that a lot of people who are experiencing homelessness, that you know, there's a fine line between, you know, being impoverished and being homeless, mm-hmm. and that some of the situations, there's overlap there, and what people are, whether they're stealing to feed their kids, whether they're stealing to feed themselves that day, or whether they're getting ticketed for sleeping in public, and then those tickets become warrants and things like that, that people can be arrested for when some of the crimes they're being punished for, you know, I mean, are arguably shouldn't even be crimes to begin with, at least not in the sense of some sort of criminal conduct and repercussions.
I have another question for you. Do you have to have money to live in the public?
Absolutely.
How so? Give me some examples of some things you need money for.
You need money for everything. It may not necessarily be money from your own personal pocket, but there is nothing that is free.
Water?
It's not free. You have to pay to have it cleaned. You have to pay for it to come through the source that you're receiving it from. It may not directly come out of your pocket, but somebody is paying for that.
Public transportation?
So not free. It's not. I mean, there is no way of getting around that.
It's not only just not free. It is very expensive. Yeah. I actually, I don't, if I could, I would buy everyone I know a bus pass and an apartment. I really would. And if I were to win the lottery, who knows, I might pick 10 lucky people and figure out their lives for them. but I did. I met a guy at the last Coffee and Conversation, and he moved here from Arkansas. He's been in and out of homelessness for the past couple of years. Mm. And, you know, by all accounts, he seems to have it really together and seems really eager to get his life together. And that's all I know. All I know is what I can, you know, really perceive from him mm-hmm. and the interactions I've had with him. Who knows? He could be a completely different person. But from what I have sort of
gauged,
yeah, I feel like he needs the potential. You know, he has the potential to get a job. He's really eager. He's staying up in North Dallas, and so he's heavily reliant on public transportation to try and even go get a job interview. Mm-hmm. And I happened to see him a week after Coffee and Conversation, and you know, he told me that he was staying with a friend of the family, and that he, you know, he's got some interviews lined up, but he just, you know, Dallas is not a walkable city for the most part. You have to have a car to go to anywhere in the Metroplex that might be offering you a job. And you can't be picky and say, oh, well, that's not 5 minutes away. Like if it's in Irving or if it's in Arlington, you have to figure out a way to get out there. And I was on my way to lunch and I just said, meet me at 1:30 and let's walk to the Ackard station. I'm getting you a bus pass, like a monthly bus pass right now. And we went and it was $80, mm-hmm. $80 for a 31-day pass. And that is a lot of money. That's a lot of money to me. I'm not poor or homeless. And of course, it relatively speaking, to help this person out and to know what that would do for him, mm-hmm. to give him that. I mean, I saw him the next day and he was glowing because he had this newfound freedom to get where he needed to be mm-hmm. and not these restraints yeah. of not having transportation.
Yeah.
Of all the things I think we hear from our customers of what they need, I feel like transportation is probably the number one thing that can hold them back from really moving forward. And I will say that getting a car can actually be more expensive to a person than getting them a bus pass. And I don't know what's happening with DART. I don't know how we can, you know, it's been in the conversation for a long time to get some sort of discount or some sort of voucher process for people who are homeless. I'm sure they don't want a whole bunch of homeless people on their DART lines, especially since they want to appeal to commuters and people, you know, who are working. But right. at the same time, homeless people are going to use public transportation. That's just a reality. And let's figure out a way for them to do it legally and not get ticketed $50.
I mean,
for being on a bus or a train.
It's not.
And then
50.
You think about the restraints, the chains. I just
200
to be stuck at a bus stop knowing you can't even get on that bus unless you beg that driver to somehow let you get by.
I'll give you a quick story. I have tickets from 6 or 7. No, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, because jumping on the train, if you don't pay them $5, they'll make you pay $75. If you don't pay them the $75, they'll make you pay $1,500. And people don't know this. And so people will jump on the train all the time. Remember Nick that was on the show?
Mm-hmm.
Nick was supposed to go to Alaska. No. I'm sorry. Canada. Driving trucks. He couldn't go to Canada driving trucks because he had tickets. And so every time I would see Nick, I would see Nick and Lou Sterrett. Because he's got tickets.
Go sit him out.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, man, tickets are really, really heavy.
But that costs the city and the county way more money to have somebody sitting out their ticket and paying their meals mm-hmm. yeah. than it would cost for the $3 or $5 whatever it was to get them that day pass for that day.
And that's why I'm really impressed with the Metro Dallas Homeless Alliance and their initiative to convince DART to allow customers who are experiencing homelessness to get reduced bus passes. Mm-hmm. I was really proud when Leon
went before city council
yeah. and he was talking to them and he wasn't asking DART to give free passes.
No.
And that's what impressed me the most. He was like, we don't want a handout. We need mm-hmm. help. And yeah. it makes sense. I mean, why not? help people who are experiencing homelessness? Why? I mean, because you can get a reduced pass for just about everything. You're a student? Oh, yeah. Get a reduced bus pass. You're over 60? Get a reduced bus pass. Do you get Social Security? You get a reduced bus pass. Seriously. Yeah. If you get any form of disability, you can get a reduced bus pass, but there's nothing in place to help.
Food stamps, TANF, those kinds of things, yeah. But not if you're homeless.
There's nothing to help the people who can't afford it.
Y'all stay tuned. We'll come back with more of the podcast and what the library is doing with the Homeless Engagement Initiative. So, Ryan, you were saying shout out to the Observer?
Yeah, I think we, while we were on hiatus for the, I guess between seasons, I guess we wound up getting a nice little award. I guess the Observer, that last year they released their Best of Dallas 2015, I should say, and they named us as the best local podcast.
Really? So,
yep.
Kudos to Rashad and Ryan for that.
Jasmine.
The host and the tech. that's what it takes to have a...
Can't do it without you producing.
A very cool podcast going on. And I mean, statistics-wise, we've exceeded 11,000 downloads and plays since we launched the podcast about 2.5 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And what I love most about this podcast is that it's evergreen. It's something that anyone can pick up and listen to at any point in the year or next year and really listen from beginning to the current end and get a feel for, you know, what's happening in Dallas, but also Rashad and your journey. And I know I saw Pastor Wayne Walker from Our Calling earlier this morning, and he said he'd actually re-listened to the whole series from beginning to end recently. Yeah. Oh, wow. So I thought that was really cool because not only is it evergreen that someone could pick up at any given time, but it's also something people could re-listen to and almost be part of this journey with you, Rashad, and with the rest of us. And, you know, of course, he asked about how the baby was doing. He has 4 kids. And, you know, the last time we recorded was before I went on maternity leave. And I think there was an episode where the baby had kicked me and we kind of were joking about that. But then I think we had another episode where, you know, we were sort of announcing the hiatus. And now I have this beautiful little boy. Yes. I'm more emotional than ever. I've wanted to cry at least 3 times today. there's something about being a mother that just changes sort of your view on life. I know we were in a strategic planning meeting yesterday for the library, and we were looking at some Dallas statistics, and we certainly are a city of haves and have-nots. The extremes between the people with money and the vast number of people living in poverty in this city is unacceptable, really. And the number of people in the city living with a household income of under $25,000. I can't imagine living off of less than $25,000 in a family household. And to me, that lends to the idea that, yes, we're talking about homelessness, but at the end of the day, we're really talking about poverty. Mm-hmm. So many people that come into homelessness, it's partially because they either can't afford the services they may have needed for mental health or substance abuse, and they end up on the streets, or they've grown up their whole lives in poverty. And so homelessness isn't that far of a stretch from where they were. I know the Stew Pot just had a documentary that was released on KERA. Mm-hmm. By director Alan Govinar. It's called Serving Second Chances, about the Stew Pot and what they're doing. And Reverend Bruce Buchanan, of course, it revolved around the Stew Pot and the work that they've done for many, many years. But he mentioned, this is something that stood out to me, is he mentioned that if you don't help turn around a person's life within the first 3 to 6 months of them entering homelessness, that the realities of that life can really consume that person. And whether that's drugs, alcohol, you know, the bonds that you create, the community you start to feel, the dependency, the understanding of how you can make this work, your own perception of what's acceptable starts to change. And it's harder and harder to get people out of homelessness if they've been in it for longer than 3 to 6 months. And I know that you can probably relate to that too. I know you mentioned that you've been lonely up there in your home without your community. You feel so alone, even though you have Facebook.
No, really though, you know what's crazy? The little lady that used to work at the Stew Pot, she's not there anymore. She retired. She told me that. She told me that, like, when I first hit the streets, she told me, she said, don't be in these streets. She said, these streets are
they'll trap you out here. And she was right. I've seen a lot of people down there. A lot of people that's been there for a very long time. I've seen a lot of people who've come out of the situations of homelessness. And I tell them I'm proud of them every time I see them, you know, because you really could get trapped in these streets, man, because you got, like, I'll never forget when I first got there, we used to call Saturday Tramp Day. And we go from place to place, from all over the city, just on a Saturday, walking to eat pancakes over here, and then ribs over here, and then chicken over here. That was the culture, you know, and you get sucked into that. Then you got people that would come to the homeless shelter and give stuff away. So you sitting at in front of the homeless shelter for hours on end. Then you got some cats sitting in there watching TV. And then, you know, you joke and you laugh with different people. You get, you know, I used to call the homeless shelter the library, because people were like books. You had the choice or the decision to open that book if you wanted to. And I would see individuals all the time who would just be sitting around. And say to myself, what does that person have that I might be able to learn from? And what can they teach me? You know? And I mean, it's definitely possible to get stuck out there. I've seen some of the things that people want, some of the things people need. Like you guys got the backpack thing coming up. Why don't you talk a little bit about it?
Well, you know, I think kind of the picture you just painted made it seem like fun, you know, going from this meal to that meal. And once you learn the resources, you're kind of like, it can be hanging out with your friends mm-hmm. and doing these things together. But I know that one of the biggest issues with whether it's living on the streets or in the shelters is that you can't fight the elements. You know, if we were San Diego and 75 degrees on average every day, maybe.
Yeah.
But the cold weather is upon us. So with National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week coming up November 14th through the 22nd, the library will do its annual homeless engagement surveys. It'll be the third year in a row that we do that. We give away a free bus pass. It's a day pass to those who participate. And then as part of that, we're also doing a winter backpack challenge that, the idea came to me from the I Have a Name project, and their Facebook page. Mm-hmm. They work to increase awareness of homeless issues across the nation. And that was something that they encourage individuals to do on their own, was basically gather some basic winter essentials and package it all in a backpack and hand it off to a person who is experiencing homelessness sort of on their own accord walking down the street. And I thought, hey, let's do this as a department, as the library. Let's get some other city departments involved. Let's get the community involved. And so that'll be coming up in the next 2 weeks. And we're really excited to see the turnout. We're hoping for at least 50 backpacks. We're hoping to exceed that. We have no concern about being able to get them in the hands of those who need them. But just a few things that we hope people will put in their backpack: a wool or fleece blanket, gloves, hat, scarf, some basic toiletries, the nail clippers, deodorant, toothpaste, mouthwash, those kinds of things. But, you know, being the library and trying to make this a little more personal, we've also asked people to include an adventure novel or inspirational book mm-hmm. To keep people warm in their thoughts. and then a note of a personal note of encouragement that, you know, might be tucked away in a pocket or something in the backpack that someone will discover maybe when they most need it. And that's, I feel like those are the little things we can do. And certainly, you know, I'm not opposed to people donating money directly to organizations. But there's something about actually putting something together and handing that off to someone directly in need and, knowing exactly where every penny that you've spent is going towards.
Yeah. And I think just to sharpen the point just a little bit, I think Wayne this morning did say that only 20% of all of Dallas's homeless individuals are currently being served at shelters. And there's like 80% that are out on.
Exactly. And our calling does a great job of getting out, you know, under bridges and in these sort of behind dumpsters, alleys, things like that, where people are finding places to sleep. And we certainly appeal to the unsheltered here at the library. Definitely people who are sheltered because of our vicinity to some of the shelters, but certainly a huge number of people we serve here are not receiving services or going into the shelters, and they certainly need some of these basic winter essentials, which other social service providers will be providing as well over the winter, but you really can't have enough of that.
That's true. Did you see the video with them on the tent city
That the Dallas Morning News aired?
I'm not absolutely sure.
Okay.
But there was a video.
Was Larry James on that video?
No. But there was a crisis intervention, I believe, was like in tent city, and it was like ripping up everybody's tent.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So that's been a, probably a recent thing.
Yeah.
Well, so under I-45 here in Dallas, there's been in the news a lot about what they're calling tent city, which for people who provide services to the homeless, it's nothing new, but the news found it and people are complaining about it on Twitter and things like that. And so now it's news. And unfortunately, because of that attention, that people are being, I guess, kicked out of that area. And, you know, of course, the city's talking about it as a public health concern, people using the restroom in that same area and that kind of thing. And of course, I think we all have our own opinions about that kind of thing. But the reality is that there's either there's not enough services for the need that exists, or there's not the right kinds of services for the need that exists. And those are the issues that a city like ours has to address. And I know that some other cities are having similar issues, of course, but are seeing an influx even more so, especially in California and areas where property costs and rent, even like our city, where rent is way high. So it's even expensive to rent, let alone own your own place, when a quarter of your income is going to the roof over your head and your income is zero, or even $100 or $500. It's just not enough to survive. And so it's easy to say, clean up this area. It's a public health concern. But that's not a solution.
When did it start costing money to live?
It started costing money to live when people realized that life was a renewable resource.
Renewable resource. Explain that to me.
Well, as long as people are living, they're going to need a place to stay. They're going to need food. They're going to need care of all sorts, medical, mental, emotional. And someone realized that there was a price to be attached to those needs and those resources. It stopped being an exchange system and started becoming very capitalist. Because, you know, back a long, long time ago, it used to be, well, you can stay here in exchange for food. Or providing care for my children while I'm out in the fields.
What?
But now we've established a currency. Everything has a value. So instead of being able to exchange a service or provide a need, now everything has a value and it costs money.
Well, what's ironic is that we actually used to be more self-sufficient. And that's, you know, when you hear self-sufficiency, you hear that thrown around a lot with homelessness, is you're trying to help people become self-sufficient. Well, actually, that's the problem, is we used to all be self-sufficient, grow our own crops, take care of ourselves in our own homes. Now, as our capitalist society, we're all much more interdependent on each other. So actually less self-sufficient, which then requires us to take care of and pay for our electric bill and pay for these things that the rest of the community is somehow providing, whether it's a company or that kind of thing. And so we're actually encouraging people who are homeless to become less self-sufficient and more interdependent on the society that we've created.
Can you blame them? Can you blame a man for becoming interdependent in this society?
No, I do it too. I mean, I make that choice every day to come to work and to be dependent on the resources around me. And
on the efforts of yourself?
And what?
On the efforts of yourself?
Yeah.
I mean, we are certainly in one sense becoming more independent, but it's at the same time sort of this nudge to still contribute. I mean, so I guess in the sense that you are still standing up and going and doing whatever your vocation is to contribute to society. So in that sense, I guess you're being self-supporting, but you're providing some one thing to the public and somebody else is providing something to the general public, and you can exchange goods and services. I guess that's where currency comes in.
Exactly.
In essence, taxes.
Well, that's another thing we all pay for. So,
in essence, you broke that down real simple for me. Taxes.
Well, but and taxes aren't, you know, they're not a bad thing. Our Dallas County taxes pay for Parkland, which help pay for services to people who wouldn't be able to, pay for those services otherwise. So, there are things in place to help the larger community and for those who can't really help themselves in a monetary way.
Government itself is a service of a type. I mean, it's just a service that we all kind of go in together on.
Right.
Last question. Is that considered conformity to go in with everybody else?
Yes.
Yes.
Short answer.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
But and I don't think there's anything wrong with conforming to a certain extent. I think you accept the game. I like to think of life as a game, right?
Okay.
And when you go in, you know that you can't just go buck wild in your game. You're going to lose that first level. You're never going to move on to the next level. You have to learn the tricks. You have to learn to go find, you know, whatever resource you need under that rock or whatever the things are hidden on that level. Mm-hmm. So that you can move on to the next level. You accept that and you move on, or you get stuck and that's okay. You choose it. And I think for someone like me, who I consider myself very sort of free-minded and that kind of thing, you know, I accept that I'm conforming to society. Mm-hmm. I accept that when the light says red, when the light shows red, I'm going to stop my car. These are the things that keep us safe, mm-hmm. is that the majority of us accept these rules. So that we don't crash into each other, and so that we can move on to the next level. And so, yes, we choose to conform. Do we have to be, you know, cookie cutter people? No. But should we conform to society if we want to reap the benefits so we can move on to the next level? Yeah. I choose to.
I've probably talked more in this episode than I probably talked before, but it's kind of like, and this is going to be doubly weird because I'm not a sports guy, but I'm going to use, if you play football, you know, you may have a lot of strategy if you're Tony Romo or whoever. You may have a certain style that you play, but there are still rules that you play that define this as a football game. If you start playing by other rules, you might suddenly be playing soccer.
Right.
So, anyway.
You choose the game you want to play.
I agree. You say you choose, but what if you choose not to be like the rest of society?
Then you can't, to me, then you cannot complain that society's not taking care of you because you have opted out.
But no, you're still being judged by society's rules and regulations, though, aren't you?
Because you're impeding upon their process. So when someone who's decided to conform to society, they're going to have a job, they're going to live downtown, they're going to walk downtown, down the street mm-hmm. with their girlfriend arm in arm to have some dinner in the restaurant that society has, you know, made normal. Mm-hmm. And someone asks you for money, that ruins their sense of norm because that's not what they've chosen in their life. They've chosen this society and then they're sort of disgruntled by the people who've chosen not to play by these rules, but yet want to reap the benefits of that person playing by the rules, of that person's money.
That makes sense.
It does make sense, but it's two conflicting ideas that have been bothering me for, I don't know, maybe 2 months now. Capitalism and communism. We live in a sense where we need the community, but then we'll capitalize based upon the needs of others. Oh, how did you put it? You put it renewable. How did you say?
Life is a renewable resource.
Renewable resource.
Okay, so that's been really bothering me. I mean, me personally, I just asked you the question, I don't know, maybe 3 questions ago. Could you blame the guy who is utilizing society or utilizing the community efforts? But yet here it is. You're out with your girl and this guy comes up to you and asks you for something. Can you blame this guy for recognizing that y'all are more well off than I am, and I'm in need, and opportunity is available only to those who actually go for it or use some type of effort. So he used his effort, and he asked. And then that guy's belittled or berated in some sort?
Well, I mean, you're asking a multifaceted question.
I am. I'm sorry. I'm being complicated.
Well,
today.
Because if you're looking at it from the perspective of the guy who asked, then no, he does not necessarily deserve to be berated or belittled because he asked. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, does he necessarily deserve to go to that nice restaurant? I mean, he didn't work for that. He didn't earn that money. All he did was ask. So, I mean, you have to really look at it from both sides. Yeah. I mean, yes. Does he deserve to eat? Yes. But does he necessarily deserve to eat a $1,500 meal? No.
Does he deserve to be respected? Yes. Should someone be berated? No. But okay. They should be respected and say, you know, sorry, man, I don't have anything for you. Even if I have money for me, even if I have money on me, I don't have anything for you.
Okay. Now, I got 2 thoughts on the mic. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, ahead, but on the flip side, if that same person that has, you know, whatever they've earned, but they feel compelled, they want mm-hmm. to help that person through right. whatever, whether directly that way. I mean, law, I know there's certain ordinances, things like that, but, or just, you know, contributing to a shelter or whatever. I mean, there's also that aspect. I mean, there's the self-driven part, you know, I work for this, this is mine, but there's like, I work for this, but I feel like I know my brother over here, my brother, human being, is falling down on hard times and I want to help him eat. So I'm going to, you know, pay for a meal or whatever that may be.
But it's not something anyone's entitled to, you know? I mean, it's something that they can hope someone feels.
My butter from another udder.
Not sure I get that one.
Butter from another udder.
Makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. I like it.
Rashadism.
Yeah. Two things came to mind. One, first off, I enjoy the conversation because my professor at school told me, he said to me a long time ago, he said, I'm surprised that you guys here at the college don't talk about morals or ethics or values. I'm shocked. College kids don't sit down and talk about this. And it's something we're having a conversation about, and I love this. And I'm just, my other thought has escaped me. It's nothing I can do about it. But I will ask the question, what do you guys want to make sure that the listeners understand about the podcast and about the public library and about us as artists and activists? What do you guys want to leave with the public? Okay. Well, how about I leave something with the public?
If you're talking about the library, that we are here to, you know, provide resources, information resources, and yes, even some entertainment to everybody. You know? I think that's part of the broader library's mission. I mean, and if we're talking about, you know, the homeless population or the population experiencing homelessness, to be more correct on that, you know, that we're here that, you know, like with the help desk and other activities that, I mean, we're going to here to give them some, you know, people some immediate, you know, just something to do, you know, whether it's game day, and then also maybe to connect them with some vital resources that they may need to, you know, whether it's the next meal or some kind of medical help or a place to stay for the night, and even job resources. I think that's what I'd say we're here for.
So basically the library is the spot for the resources that you need.
I think that the biggest thing that we should try to convey to people who are listening and people who are interested in what it is that we do is that you need to take the blinders off, because we've gotten into this field of where we're just one track. We don't see what's going on around us, what's going on the outside. It's just what's right in front of me, what's happening right now. And it's important that we take that off, look around, see what's going on outside of what it is that you've come up to know. If you've never known poverty, how can you comment on it? If you've never experienced different things, then who are you to say what's right or what's wrong? We need to understand where both sides are coming from, because there's two sides to every coin.
There might be two sides to a coin, but there's many more sides to humanity than that. And I know from the public library's perspective, I was talking to a public library in California, and I said, we're on the right side of this. You know, they're facing a lot of issues with the city and with other customers complaining about the homeless, and that, you know, they're sort of in this epidemic state. And I said, you know, you keep fighting the good fight. We can take the moral high ground on this, because as a library, we are here in the center of our communities. And this isn't our issue. This isn't our issue, but it's a community issue. So it is our issue. And we're going to take a stance to say that this is important. This is an important issue for the community to solve. And that this may not be our exact issue, but that this is an issue in our community. And we can't ignore it. So yes, the couple walking down the street who might feel, you know, perturbed that someone who's chosen not to live by society's norms wants some money from them. You know, yes, I can understand where they would come from if they were disgruntled by this, but I can also say that is a huge red flag that the world we live in is not as perfect and pretty as sometimes we want to believe it is, because of sort of the narrow scope of our lives, that our community is much larger than the lives we live. Mm-hmm. And that when we do get someone asking us for money, or we do see someone sleeping, I think it's a big eye-opening experience. And it says that we have some real problems in our community, and we need to be part of the solution. We don't need to be complaining and being a part of the problem. And the library, especially our library, is willing to sort of be that anchor in our community to say, let's start those conversations to be a part of the solution, and let's quit complaining about the problems.
I agree. If I might add anything, I would add the word for the day is perspective. And I challenge you guys to stay tuned for our next podcast. I'll give you the definition of perspective. Hey, can we pray out? Can we leave? Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for the opportunity to rep you, to bring forth the truth that the library is the spot where the resource is at. We thank you. We appreciate you. We thank you for everything, God, and all that we might be going through, God, and others might be going through, God. We just ask for comfort. Help us to be communal in a time of capitalism. Help us, God, to be understanding and always have different perspectives or
a willingness to accept different perspectives. More than anything, God, just help us to love and teach us to love. In Jesus Christ's name, amen.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Street View. You can visit us online at streetviewpodcast.com. Tune us in again next time for more discussion.